This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Hello, and welcome to Sounds Choral, a program that seeks to present the vast body of choral repertoire in a way that is intelligible, relevant, entertaining, and uplifting. I'm your host, Ryan Brando, the Artistic Director of Amor Artis, Princeton Pro Musica, and the Monmouth Civic Chorus. I'm sure that many of you who tune into Sounds Choral are very familiar with George Frideric Handel's most famous oratorio, Messiah. But of course, Messiah is just one of 20-some oratorios that Handel wrote. So on today's show, we're going to turn our attention to an oratorio that for many years was just as popular, and sometimes even more popular, than Messiah, Israel and Egypt. When Handel was 21, he went to Italy. While he was there, he absorbed the Italian opera style, which he then took back to his adopted home, England, where it became the foundation of a very successful career. He ran opera companies for about 20 years in the 1720s and 30s. In all, he wrote more than 40 operas. During that same brief stay in Italy, he had also absorbed the Italian oratorio style. Church authorities forbade the performance of operas during Lent, so composers satisfied opera lovers by creating music dramas out of biblical stories, swapping out historical and mythical characters for the key figures of the Hebrew Bible, saints, and so on. These oratorios closely resembled their operatic cousins, combining recitatives, arias, and choruses to tell their stories just without costumes, sets, and spectacle. After about 20 years of doing opera in London, Handel switched gears. The London opera audience grew tired of Italian opera and wanted something different. He started to write oratorios. Unsurprisingly, Handel's oratorios are mostly dramatic. They tell the stories of various biblical figures, people like Saul, and Solomon, Esther, Deborah, Susanna, Judas Maccabeus. Like his operas, some of Handel's oratorios not only told these stories, but had allegorical undertones. The occasional oratorio, Alexander Ballas, and Joshua all have militaristic themes and musical characteristics and reflect the nationalistic mood of England following unsuccessful attempts to overthrow the Hanoverian monarchy during 1745 and the spring of 1746. In Judas Maccabeus, the title role might have represented the Duke of Cumberland, its text meant to glorify the Duke upon his returning victorious in April 1746 from the Battle of Culloden in Scotland. Ironically, though they were his most famous, Messiah and Israel in Egypt bear the label oratorio, awkwardly at best. They aren't explicitly dramatic. They don't present a story populated by named characters leading the action through their solo arias. Messiah and Israel in Egypt are two of just three Handel oratorios that have text directly based on scripture. Christ, of course, is the subject of Messiah, but Handel's librettist tells his story obliquely through prophecy and reflection. Israel in Egypt, which has no title character, is in two parts, Exodus and Moses' song. For the first part, Exodus, Handel did not set a librettist dramatic poem, but instead put together his own collection of passages from the book of Exodus and the Psalms to tell the story of the plagues brought down on the Egyptians. The second part draws directly from the Shirat Hayam, the Song of the Sea, or Song of Moses, from the book of Exodus. So it's not a tale of an individual biblical figure, but the voice of an entire people celebrating their deliverance. The whole work functions almost like an oversized anthem collection. We've got one grand chorus following another, with a relative paucity of solo arias and recitative. I think maybe it's because of this unusual, peculiar balance of choral to solo movements that the opera-crazed, aria-loving English public initially rejected Israel and Egypt. It wasn't until the late 18th century, after a performance of the work at Handel's Centenary in 1784, and amidst the growing popularity of choral societies in England, that Israel and Egypt was firmly established in the repertoire. Then, by the 19th century, the work had become even more popular than Messiah among choral societies. As you start to listen to this work, it should come as no surprise why this was the case. The choir plays a star role throughout. Israel and Egypt fires every weapon in Handel's choral arsenal. Vigorous, florid polyphony juxtaposes massive, declamatory block chords. and lilting elegant movements influenced by Baroque dance stand alongside stern canons in the older Renaissance style. Let's listen to the first movement. Handel opens with a broad choral essay in C minor that portrays the anguish of the Israelites' bondage. It combines two figures, a more angular theme to set, "They oppressed them with burdens and made them serve," and a cantus firmus-like melody for, "And the children of Israel sighed, and their cry came up unto God." Here's John Eliot Gardner, the Monteverdi Choir, and the English Baroque soloists singing the first chorus from Handel's Israel in Egypt. This is Sounds Choral. I'm your host, Ryan Brando, and today we're exploring Handel's oratorio, Israel in Egypt. Following that opening, Handel launches a series of movements that depict the plagues brought down on Egypt. These are fascinating. After the rivers have been turned to blood, the chorus delivers a pretty severe fugue whose subject starts with some angular leaps followed by chromatic motion. It's here, in the midst of these plagues, that we realize that the orchestra in fact, plays the other starring role, constantly wrestling with the chorus for the spotlight. Handel inventively marshals the orchestral forces to portray a dazzling array of effects. After the rivers of blood, frogs jump onto the picture. Flies buzz around our heads in whirring clouds of skittering violins. Oboes drip out a few raindrops, but the rain develops into a full-blown storm of pounding eighth-note hailstones and rains of fire from trumpets, trombones, and timpani. Murky, unresolved harmonies portray thick darkness all over the land. Rough, chopping violin bows and quick blasts from trombones depict the smiting of the firstborn. Oceanic swells of arpeggios drown the enemy, but spare the Israelites, whom Moses leads out of the depths. One can't help but be engaged by this orchestration. It's so vivid, it's so pictorial. By the end of this sequence of choruses, we've also heard nearly every choral texture and style that Handel ever wrote in. None other than Joseph Haydn, in attendance at the centenary performance in 1784, supposedly burst into tears at the conclusion of Israel and Egypt and declared, "He is the master of us all." Let's listen all the way through the series of plagues to the end of the first part of this oratorio. Part of the fun is moving directly from one plague to the next. I've played a lot of British choirs in this show, but today I'm going to focus on an American choir, the choir of Trinity Church, Wall Street. They and the Trinity Brook Orchestra under Julian Wachner recorded Israel and Egypt in 2011, and I'm going to play the series of movements of the plagues from that wonderful disc.
Then sent he Moses his servant, and Aaron whom he had chosen. These showed his signs among them, and wonders in the land of Ham. He turned their waters into blood.
They know the truth.
Oh,
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, this is Sounds Choral, and I'm your host, Ryan Brando. We just heard the choir of Trinity Church, Wall Street, sing Handel's masterful depiction of the plagues visited on the Egyptians. The second part of Israel and Egypt celebrates that victory, setting the Song of Moses from Exodus. Handel includes yet more rousing choruses, but also some lovely material for the soloists. Early in the second part, he introduces a beautiful duet for two sopranos, "The Lord is My Strength and My Song." We'll hear from sopranos Susan Gritton and Libby Crabtree, and the Brandenburg Consort under the direction of Stephen Cleobury. In the midst of all of these celebratory choruses and duets and arias, Handel puts the longest chorus of the second part, and its text gets at the essence of the Exodus story. It is, "The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold on them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. By the greatness of thy arm, they shall be still as a stone till thy people pass over, O Lord, which thou hast purchased." Here's that chorus, "The people shall hear," as performed by Harry Christophers and the 16.
The
Nobody can bring a piece home quite like Handel. And the ending of Israel and Egypt, I think, is one of his most magnificent. It's actually a series of choruses that quickly alternate with recitative. It begins, "The Lord shall reign forever and ever." There's some pompous, jaunty eighth notes, and the choir sings at the unison, a long cantus firmus. The tenor finishes the story for us. He says, "A horse of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and with his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought again the waters of the sea upon them. But the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea." The chorus repeats, "The Lord shall reign forever and ever." The tenor again with the story. "Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them," and the soprano and chorus answer, "Sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." The strings start to gallop, the trumpets start to blast. This is one of the best choruses in the entire choral repertoire, and a fitting end to Handel's Israel and Egypt. We'll turn again to the recording by the choir of Trinity Church, Wall Street, under the direction of Julian Wachner.
And the Lord brought again the waters of the sea upon them. But the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. Sister of Aaron took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them,
oh,
the years, some critics have embraced Israel and Egypt only half-heartedly, because it's too grandiose to be just a ceremonial anthem and not quite character-driven enough to be a true dramatic oratorio. The Handel scholar Julian Herbage, for instance, called the work Handel's most superbly magnificent failure. But I think that any attempt to make sense of Israel and Egypt by comparing it to the rest of Handel's work misses the point entirely. We can celebrate the fact that there's nothing quite like it. Its ability to portray everything from ferocious intensity to tender humility to triumphant jubilation, it's a one-of-a-kind synthesis of chorus and orchestra, and I think it manages to surpass individual character to capture the collective heart stirrings of an entire people. Handel's work resounds with a triumphant and universal human spirit, speaking as powerfully for the children of Israel it depicts in music as it did to the proud audiences of the growing British Empire who made it a lasting part of our musical canon, as it does to audiences today. Thank you for listening. It's been such a pleasure to listen to this music with you. One of the greatest oratorios in the repertoire, Handel's Israel and Egypt. Sounds Choral is produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network. I'm your host, Ryan Brando. You can listen to any recent Sounds Choral program by going to our website, wwfm.org, and clicking on Classical and Webcasts. You can also support programming like this with a donation and membership at our website. Thank you so much for listening. Sounds Choral is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and wwfm.org.
A man of war.